Hello, listeners. Yamina here. Welcome to the Dr. GPCR podcast. I'm very excited to bring you brand new episodes. These are the latest hot off the press. After these, we will take a break for the holidays, during which we will revisit some of our favorite conversations from the past 3 years. Then, in mid-January 2024, we will bring you brand new episodes again. If you'd like to join us as a guest, or if you have guest suggestions, please email us at hello@drgpcr.com. Before we dive into this episode, we would like to take a moment to thank our Dr. GPCR Ecosystem 2023 partners for their support: Domain Therapeutics, GPCR Therapeutics, Design Pharmaceuticals, Montana Molecular, and Orion Biotechnology. We had a blast talking about GPCRs in immuno-oncology at our last Dr. GPCR symposium held November 17th, 2023. With your premium Dr. GPCR ecosystem membership, you can watch the stimulating conversation with our expert guests. We're already preparing the programming for the 2024 symposia. If you'd like to give a talk or suggest a speaker, please email us at hello@drgpcr.com. We're currently working on the Dr. GPCR University program to provide you courses and content on all aspects of GPCR research and support our community. Our first course will be held live starting January 25th, 2024, by none other than Dr. Terry Kinnakin. More details, including the registration form, coming in December 2023. And now, let's dive into this episode. Hello, everyone. This is Yamina from Dr. GPCR. And this evening, I'm very excited to have with me Dr. Katarzyna Marcinkiewicz. And I practiced.
And you said it well.
Thank you so much. Hi, Katarzyna. Nice to see you.
Hello. Good evening. Nice to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Of course, very excited to have you back. So you and I, just to give the public back, the audience background, you and I met for the first time in June this year at the Gordon Conference, Molecular Pharmacology in Switzerland. We had a great conversation. And then you joined us also earlier this summer, or later this summer, for a career panel. So yes. Let's start at the beginning. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. Nice to be here with all of you. My name is Katarzyna Marcinkiewicz, and I am a senior editor for the journal Nature Communications. I have been an editor for almost 7 years now. I currently am with Nature Communications, but I earlier was also on the teams of Nature Biotechnology and Nature Structure and Molecular Biology. So this is who I am right now. I come from Poland. My first degree is in pharmacy and pharmaceutical sciences, actually. And that I have from University of Warsaw. And this is when I first heard of GPCRs as any pharmacist. We first hear about them as drug targets. And then I worked briefly in Germany, in Magdeburg, in a neuroscience institute, Leibniz Institute for Neuroscience. And I ended up getting my PhD from Weill Cornell Medical College. I think the school is now called something else. Here in New York, I am currently based in New York. I also have some postdoctoral experience from New York University Langone Medical Center. Mm-hmm. For my PhD, I worked on epigenetic in cancer. For my postdoctoral experience, I aimed to work on epigenetics and ended up doing more of a cell biology project on cellular senescence. Mm. And I mention all that because I think now in retrospective, I think it's pointed out to my current career, which I really, really like. I just could not focus on one topic. I did the pharmacy and then neuroscience and then epigenetics and cancer and then, you know, cell biology, senescence, very different things. And now looking back, it makes sense because as an editor, I really read about many different things, many different topics. I don't have any particular focus. Well, I do, but it is way, way broader than I would have if I stayed in a lab.
Interesting. Did you always know you wanted to be a scientist?
Yes. Well, not always. I was maybe around six
Okay.
when I learned such a job existed. I learned in relation to a discovery of a microscope, and I thought it was fascinating. So it was even with relation to the microscope, I kind of knew, and microscope as it is used in life sciences. So I also had this interest in life sciences and biology, chemistry as well. So I was six very early on.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, what school did you go to so that at six you actually
No.
get to take a look at a microscope? Although I have to say that my currently 8-year-old, I bought him his first microscope at six.
Yes,
So.
my kids also got their microscopes very early. My microscope was not at school. This was one of my great grandfathers was a doctor, and so he owned a microscope because he used it in his regular practice
Yeah.
himself. And
Okay. Do you remember what was the first thing you looked at under the microscope?
I am pretty sure they were leaves from some house plants. Yes.
It can be really, really cool.
Oh,
I get it.
absolutely. Yes. So it was one of these it has I actually do like botanics. It's funny that I don't remember the name. Elegant green leaves with a white stripe, so I actually could
Okay.
see the difference between the cells that were green and those that were not. So it
Wow.
was very cool.
That's I don't think we've ever had a guest on the podcast who at this young age knew that science was the way to go. And then how
Well,
did
but
you
I,
go ahead,
you
no,
know,
no.
I did not stick with it in a way. I am not an active scientist anymore. So many people would argue that I did not, but I cannot leave it. I stay on the orbit. So, and
Yeah,
I,
I think it you end up enjoying what everyone else is doing in your current role, because you get to read all of these papers.
That's true, yes.
Did you also like to read books as a younger child? I'm thinking here because now you're an editor, so you get to read on so
Yes.
many topics.
Yes, I always liked to read, and I never had this problem with. So I like to read fiction and nonfiction, and I also quite early started to read these popular science magazines that every country has available, almost. So I like to read, yes. But you know, for I think the reason for me to eventually ending up being an editor, going into this direction, and being so happy about this career choice and truly enjoying working, being an editor, the true reason for this is not the love of reading, but rather the fact that I, during my training, I realized that as an active scientist, you really need to focus on a more defined area of research. You need to pick your topic. And I think it kind of, from my experience, it kind of happens organically, where people just get so interested and so invested into whatever they are studying. Once they find it, they really want to pursue it. So to me, I enjoyed working in a lab, but that never happened. I always liked to hear and read about other things. And it had more, yes, I do like reading. And now, since this is my bread and butter and my daily main daily activity, reading, I do read quite fast. But what I truly enjoyed is being able to learn about other things, new things.
I find it fascinating because the way you're talking about it is exactly the way I feel about GPCRs. So I do remember the first time when Michel Bouvier was teaching, cellular signaling, and I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And I want to learn and I want to work on this. And not to say that other fields are not interesting, but in my mind, it's like, but GPCR is, and
Yes.
sometimes people are like, yeah, but this thing, oh, GPCR. It's like, no, this is it. For me, this is it. So I absolutely relate.
Yeah, and it can be on a different, like, on a different level, right?
Yes.
For someone, like you say, it will be the specific topic, a specific protein or family of proteins. And for someone else, it will be more, this, like me, it will be more this possibility to having a job where I can really, when I am expected to learn new things all the time. Obviously, every scientist learns a new thing every day,
Of course.
a new thing or two every day or two. But I
Of course.
mean, you get, and I hope I explained what I mean by learning new things. And
Of course, of course. I want to hear a little bit more about how was it to move from Poland to the US and to New York City. I mean, I moved from Montreal to New York, and for the first 2 weeks I was dizzy at all the noise and all the excitement around me. So I
I
wonder
am
how it was for you.
still dizzy. I've been here for a very long time. And New York is, I think, I mean, it's an amazing city, and I hope I will never become jaded when it comes to New York. Every time I get out of the subway and there is New York on the other end of my subway ride, it is extremely exciting. I was so when I moved, I moved for personal reasons. So I already had my family here. So I had something that was grounding, and also it wasn't a move all by myself. So in that sense, it was a little easier. I will not have an advice to someone who is just coming for the PhD or maybe a postdoc opportunity. So I will not have an advice to someone like this, or at least not an advice based on my own experience. But it was, I come from Poland. I first knew how science was organized in Poland much more. And back then, Poland was not yet or just joined European Union, so the science, the part science was not yet that great, that well funded. Poland was not yet a wealthy country, still isn't, but it's getting there. I remember my very first in the very first lab where I ran a Western blot, an entire department owned one Western blot running one,
One
how
machine,
to say it, like one machine. We had, we were able to pour manually four gels at a time. So we need to pour them, use them, and we're only able to pour another one, another four when we used these four, and one machine. So only two were running at a time, and the other two gels were waiting in the fridge. And it was several labs who were using this. So this was Poland. It is different now. There is a lot of great institutions, much better funding right now. But this was my experience when I was still a student. But before moving to US, I worked for 2 years in Germany. So I already knew a little. I already knew how the organization looked like in a place that was a little better founded. So in that sense,
It
it wasn't
wasn't
such a big
a
shock.
shock. No, it's interesting that you mentioned this. So when I moved to New York from Montreal, I mean, it's Canada, right? In the lab, we in Canada doing my PhD, we would also pour our own gels to run Western blots. Yes, we had more than one machine in one lab, but I was shocked when I got to New York and actually you would got buy the precast gels. And you just take it out and then you run it and then you're done. It was very, very shocking. Yet very pleasant as well because it allowed you to run multiple gels without having to even think about actually mixing it. And especially we had in Montreal this setup where if you didn't match the glass properly, then it would just, it would
Yeah, it would
leak.
leak.
It would leak before it solidified, and then you had to start over, and it's acrylamide and blah. So,
Yes. So you know
all the
all my
pleasures.
pains as well. So
All
that
the
was
pleasures.
not here. I am wondering if I could thinking of any more universal, experience that I could share with. One great thing about New York is that there is so many great institutions here. So there is, even if you don't find someone whom you would need for a collaboration, a potential collaboration, even if you don't find them at your own institution, it is very likely that there is someone else within the New York City who is an expert within that area. So my I joined Weill Cornell Medical College, which is located across the street from Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute, and across another street from the Rockefeller University. So the three institutions run a lot of programs together, actually, and the collaborations are plenty and a lot of and very easy. You really just need to cross the street to talk to
Literally.
someone. And this is just within, this is just the upper east. If I say just the Upper East Side, I will probably be not mentioning yet another institution that is there. So this is just this one crossing, street crossing, that the three institutions are at. There is so many other places
No,
where
agreed.
science is. Yeah, so this is something that is really amazing about New York in terms of science, that it is so easy to find someone else
No,
to
that's true.
collaborate with.
That's true. Well, I spent 5 years in New York and 5 years at Rockefeller, so fully agreed with, you just had to cross the street and you dropped a pin and then you had a lab who may or may not be able to help you, but you had the opportunity to talk to people, which I think was really great.
And so even just talking to people is always great, and
Absolutely.
you learn so
Absolutely.
much.
So how did you, after you mentioned working in different fields in the lab and then realizing, well, this is not exactly what I like because I like more topics, how did you plan your exit into becoming an editor? I'm very curious about that.
Well, I really can. Once I was almost ready, I really started applying
Jobs.
for jobs. And this is actually maybe a good thing that I didn't have or sharing that story is maybe a good thing, because I think it's very encouraging to anyone who is maybe looking and overwhelmed and terrified by how intimidating it looks to find a job outside of academia. I really just started applying. I of course knew some people who were already in publishing in at with different roles. I knew them from my time at in my PhD lab, and also from the postdoc. But when I was applying, none of the people whom I knew was able to connect me to any open position, or even help in a more direct way than just have an informational interview with me. So they could talk with me about how this work looks like, but not really connect to any opening. So I really, really found ads on online and applied to open positions. And once I got contacted back, I went through the entire process, and this is how I got my first job. without knowing anyone within the company, without contacting anyone at the journal directly before they reached out to me. And yet it worked out. So this is something that I always like to share, that it is possible to just connect with your future job through internet and without getting your foot into the door in a way through connections or any other way. So in that sense, I don't have any.
Did you
inspiring story myself?
No, I mean, I think it what your story says is, you know, once you figure out what you like and what you don't like, just go for it and don't give up.
So this is this definitely it took some time. I didn't get the very first job that I applied for. It took some applying, and in the meantime I was also applying for other jobs related to science communications, and some of them I did interview and I did not get the jobs. I did get some offers that I did not end up taking, since for many reasons. And yet eventually, so like you say, this is very important. Once you know what you want, persevere in trying to get there, because it will happen. And once you have a job that you like, it's really just where you feel like this is your place in the world and this is what you want to do. It really is a great feeling, and it is very important for a person, for and also for being good at this job. So you give yourself to your job if you like it, and your job gives back to you and gives you a sense of fulfillment and accomplishment. And it may seem hard to find a job, to land it, and it may seem impossible for a little bit, but persevering is very important. But you know, specifically, if any of our listeners is, if there is anyone interested in editing job, specifically, there are ways that a person could be better prepared than I was initially. So for example, we do have many opportunities to write. Not a lot, but if someone is interested in it, we do write short stories, like we call them picture stories, short summaries of studies that were published recently in other journals. We write research highlights, which are similar, very, very short pieces describing research. So any writing experience can already show that you are interested in that, it can show that you are good at writing about science. So writing for any outlet, even having a blog where you would describe a study that you liked a lot, is a great way to show your interest in that in that type of career.
That's what our Dr. GPCR team does, actually. So we have currently three volunteers who are either undergrads or graduate students or even postdocs. And so in exchange for, you know, being in the middle of what we do, in exchange for getting access, and also sometimes I review slides, sometimes I listen to presentations that they're getting for. One of the things that we ask them to do is to write a once a month or even once every 6 weeks, depending on how busy they are, to write at least a 500 word piece or article about any scientific topic, which obviously has to be on GPCRs, but any paper that they like or anything that they feel like they want to talk about. And I was talking to one of them the other day, and what's making, you know, we were emailing. And I said, look how beautiful it is. You just type your name in the ecosystem, and then you have the 7 or 8 articles that you wrote. And it's such a beautiful calling card.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? So this is something that definitely would help in searching for a job like that. Although Again, being an editor at a scientific journal, it may involve writing.
Yes.
It is not mostly, it is not what we do most of the time. And also some for someone who does not like writing much, just reading and thinking about other people's writing, there is possibilities, there is opportunities also to just focus on reading and on
Really?
peer review and
I
not
like
on
it.
writing.
So how does your typical day look like? Which is, I think, atypical, because I think we talked about this at the at the symposium and career panel. But anything.
Well, so I am a scientific editor, a manuscript editor, which means the most important part of the job is reading the submissions that come to the journal, and deciding which of them would be a nice, look like a nice fit in the journal, and then organizing the peer review process for those. Every editor organizes it differently. Some people like to read a little bit every day and do a little bit of the of each part of the job every day. Other people like to have a reading day and a reviewer finding day and decision making day. This really depends. Then there will be periods during the year when we focus more on accepting papers. For example, right now we're the end of the year is approaching. A lot of researchers need or would like to have a publication date in 2023 and not later. So we try to, as much as we can, we try to offer help and accept these papers early so that they can come out still in 2023, and for whatever reason, whether it's grants that have been already awarded or grant applications, we focus now on publishing these papers, which we can still accept for publication in 2023. So, you know, every day with. It's maybe easier to say how a week looks like. Every week we'll have a huge chunk of reading new manuscripts. I am now, and every editor quite quickly becomes very fast at reading. We come from the group of people who already like to read, who are not shy, who will read papers on topics which they are not very familiar with, and yet as an editor you still constantly get papers which are outside of your area of expertise, just because the other editor at the journal is traveling or absent, or there isn't anyone, there is a lot of who is an expert on this particular topic, and you suddenly become responsible for that topic. So there is always a chunk of papers which need to, not papers, submissions. They are not yet papers. There is always a chunk of new manuscripts that need to be read. There is always those that are selected for peer review. There is a huge task of selecting the right peer reviewers. And it also takes a lot of time. This is because we want of course, we need to select peer reviewers who will be able to appreciate the content. So we want people who are knowledgeable, who know the system, but who also know the techniques that were used. We want the people who will care about it, but we also don't want anyone who has a conflict of interest. Let me mention here, GPCRs. This field is so interconnected. Everyone collaborates with everyone.
I know.
Everyone has papers together. It is a struggle to find reviewers.
Yes, because you end up finding that person A actually collaborated 2 years ago with person B.
Yes. So we rely a lot on the referees self.
Yes.
You know, on their self
On their judgments,
awareness.
yes, and
Yeah,
aware,
and their own judgment. And we always, sometimes we think, oh, maybe 5 years is not enough. And some people will say, no, I had a paper together with this or that co-author 5 years ago, and I still cannot, I will not be impartial. Other people feel that they can be more impartial. It's also hard for us to say how close the collaborations were sometimes. Oftentimes, a paper together doesn't mean that the two people actually interacted in a very close manner. So this is another challenge that we work with. And another thing is, we like to have reviewers who really want to do the review. So because these tend to be much better if the referee is also interested in the topic, if they are excited about the paper that we send them. This makes for a so much better process.
And it's
And
a
we
lot of work. It's so much work. I've reviewed papers and I've been on as a guest editor too. And all of these are so much work because, one, from a reviewer perspective, you are giving your opinion. The editor is going to read it. And based on that, the paper's fate will be decided. But from an editor perspective as well, at least I was a guest editor a couple of times on a couple of frontier, collections. And it was so difficult because I had to make sure that I picked the right people who I knew that know enough about it and they can judge. And I've seen good and bad reviews, bad in the sense that they were not in depth. They were not negative. They were just, you could tell that the person either didn't have the expertise or the time. So it's, and you're, as a scientist, you work in the lab and you write this manuscript and there's so many people and they give you like their hard-earned words and data. So it's a big responsibility to pick the right, treat the manuscript as it should be.
Yes, and so this really takes time, and we truly this is the heart of our work. It is wonderful when I write to someone to invite them to review a paper and they get back to me and say that, oh, this is so interesting. I don't really have the time, but I will have to make the time because I am itching to read this. And I've been waiting for someone
Work on this.
to do that kind of experiment. So I have to do this. And from experience, I can already say that if this happens, if I send out a few invitations and everyone whom I invited accepts right away, and maybe some of these people will actually get back to me to express their excitement. These papers usually do much, much better. There is no delays because everyone is involved in the, in science. And of course, yes, I appreciate it's a lot of work. So I it's a lot of work to review a paper. It is very time consuming. So when I'm saying here, oh, people are excited and these are good reviewers, it's not to these anyone who maybe takes a longer time. I know it's a difficult task, but I'm just saying what I'm trying to convey here is that the editor's jobs is to try hard to find these people who will have the time and who will have the expertise and who will be excited about the
Exactly.
research and the topic and the findings that the manuscript describes, so that everyone is involved who is involved cares about the findings. And a great thing about being an editor is that I get I get to see this. I get to see the people's excitement. I get to read their reports, and I can see how the paper improves as a result. And of course, we all see it. As a scientist, we have seen, we've all got the reviewers' reports back, and there was some good advice in there. We know it happens. But as an editor, this is my bread and butter. I see it every day, multiple times every day. So if I know, for anyone who thinks they might enjoy that,
It's a good career choice for anyone who likes to read it, but also who likes to be at the forefront of reading these
So it's,
manuscripts.
I am not anymore in the lab. I am not involved in doing these experiments. But I do get excited because the authors are excited about their research. And when I do my job right, I find them the referees who are also excited. And you know, sometimes they might be excited about the findings and then very critical about the paper itself, very critical about the techniques chosen, or you
The
know,
interpretation.
skeptical about the interpretation. Yes. But it doesn't mean, you know, even if they are critical, they can still be invested in the findings, in the science behind the manuscript. And this is what we aim for. So this takes time, finding people. And also, at the same time, you know, we try to keep our reviewer pool diverse. So we try not to go always to the same people. We try to find new researchers who maybe did not publish yet with Nature Communications, in my case, but with the journal. We try to find more junior researchers who are maybe not yet PIs, but who already have enough experience to give their opinion on the papers and to give informed opinion. And oftentimes a postdoc is much more familiar with a particular technique than a PI would be. They know, you know, in and outs of how it's done, and they can pick up on some things that are that end up being quite important. So we also look for junior people. You know, we look for people, always welcome people from underrepresented groups in any way. Be it, you know, gender diversity, be it geographical diversity. If we can find a, you know, a specialist in a, say, in a country which is not very well known for its science, because science is just not very well funded there, it's always we always try to find these people, and we always welcome specialists in such who have, you know, who have this more diverse background. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be offensive in any way here. I hope I'm not overstepping. But in addition to science, we also try to promote diversity in science. And this is, we feel as editors, we feel this is one way of doing this. We can engage people from many different countries, from many different backgrounds. And it also gives a different perspective on the papers. So even if, you know, if I choose to pick someone who has maybe a more narrow perspective, but a very different one than everyone else, it's it still brings a new pair of eyes to that research, to the topic. So this is another thing that we do.
I
All
think
right.
as long as you know everyone, as long as the goal is to give the manuscript a constructive criticism to make it better and to make sure that it's scientifically accurate. And I think even authors welcome this, where you actually can make a case and say, well, this is what you've done. I don't agree with you because XYZ, and look at the literature. And then it just gives the authors a chance to rethink and perfect the manuscript, which I really like. And it's a hard process, but it's very enjoyable once you know, once you're over that hump. Because whenever you submit a paper and then you know it's being reviewed, then you have 4 weeks of, oh my God, what's going on? And then when the email drops with the reviews are ready, and sometimes it's very good, sometimes it's very bad. Most of the time it has, you know, this balance between different reviewers, but it's still a very interesting and I think very nice process that you can get used to. And it's always very rewarding when people are focusing on the science and not on the names of who is on the author, or you know, every comp when the science is the priority. I think it's a really nice, it's a nice process. The other thing I wanted to ask you, I know I mentioned it in the beginning that you and I met for the first time at the Gordon Conference, the Molecular Pharmacology in Switzerland, which was really great. And then our conversation divested into a different direction. And without necessarily putting you on the spot, I'm just curious about what are the trends? And I told you I'm going to ask this.
Of
And
course.
from a manuscript perspective, what are p in the GPCR realm in general, what are the trends, or have you seen any uptake in the number of manuscripts that have been submitted in the past couple of years? Because, sorry, before I let you answer, I'm think when I talk to, for example, people in the private sector, everybody says, well, we're living right now a renaissance of the GPCR era. So.
Yes. I would agree. So one thing which I'll mention is that within the GPCR, within the very broad field of the GPCR research, I specifically handle manuscripts which are which focus on structural findings, biochemistry that use a lot of biochemistry or biophysics. So this is what I see, and these are the submissions which I see most often. So my view is also my view based on what the journal is seeing is also skewed a little bit because I will focus on these very molecular findings. But I have to say, with the structures of GPCRs, which are now plentiful and more, there is more and more of them coming out. The resolution is higher and higher. So I think these structures help a lot to address again the possibility to design GPCR, a particular receptor specific small molecules, or maybe not small, maybe peptides, or
Antibodies.
maybe antibodies, different therapeutic modalities that could modulate in different ways the GPCRs of interest. And I think structures, be it cryo-EM structures or predicted structures, or a compilation of both worlds, so experimentally derived and computationally derived structures, they allow nowadays to revisit the design of new molecules, of new ligands.
Exactly.
And I think this is something that we definitely see. But in general, so I will also mention what happened at this conference. The last closing talk of the conference was actually given by Yamina, who didn't give a talk, but rather invited the audience to talk about, to answer this very same question. What are the things which are important to you? What is that excites you about the field? And I have to say, I sat through this talk and was very happy because my own notes and our own internal findings about what is important in the GPCR research was exactly what people mentioned there. So yes, new structures, this is what I see most often, but I think there was also the signaling from different, not just from plasma membrane, but also from other cellular compartments that was mentioned. The computational, all the different kinds of computational insights into the GPCRs, not just structures, but maybe dynamics, maybe integration of the GPCR signaling. So integration of promiscuous signaling from promiscuous receptors, integration like I will mention chemokine receptors here as an example, where the same chemokine can, but this is not to be understood as
Everybody has drop what you're doing and all work on chemokine receptors.
as an
No,
indication
no,
of a particular
no.
editorial interest, because like I say, in our interests we want to follow the field, so we want we really we this is why we go to conferences to learn, but also to hear from people who are still at the bench, to hear from them what
Exactly.
is that is interesting to them. In our selections, we always follow the field's lead, and we just try. Our job is to try to find the papers that will be of interest to our readers, as we imagine them.
Yeah.
These are
I think it was a really that you mentioned. I think I struggle just kind of give you a background on this because so when I was asked to give a talk, I told myself, well, I don't work in the lab, so what am I supposed to talk about? And then I was in the la it was the last talk at the last session on the last day. And then we had all the scientists, all the PIs speak before me, who were focused on very much on neuroscience because the session was dedicated to Mark Caron. So it was a very difficult thing, especially that I didn't prepare any slides up until I think the last night before or something like that. So obviously, just because I figured, I won't have slides, we will just have an open conversation. But then I said, wow, I think I need something. And I think people loved it very much that, we had some, and I loved how much people were really playing the game. And we had a conversation in there. And one of the last people who spoke was actually Tom Sakmar from Rockefeller, who was my postdoc mentor. And people then went to him and they asked him, was this like planned that you would say this when Yamina would present? And he said, no, we didn't plan it. But it was a really nice way of wrapping up the entire conference. So no, I think
This
it's
is
good.
true.
I unfortunately we couldn't record because I think it would have been even better if we could have recorded. But
Yes,
yeah.
that's that it is
That
true.
would have
But
been
I
so
think
nice. Yeah.
against the rules
The
that
GRC. Yeah.
ERC has.
Yeah,
But
yeah,
yes, indeed, it was a great way to wrap up the conference. So what else was we mentioned structures, we mentioned integration of GPCR
Yes.
signaling.
Yeah. Signaling beyond the plasma membrane. I think that was very, there's an article that came out just last week about that. I've wondered, I have actually wondered why should we care about signaling beyond the plasma membrane? One, I don't think we had or we have all the tools that we need to truly appreciate, not only to measure it, but also to link it to some function, to some biological function or to some pathophysiological state, which is why I don't think we're not there yet, but I think we're getting there.
Which is, yeah, great.
Yeah.
I
All
think there
right.
was
Please go ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
just wanted to mention, but that will be nothing new. Biased signaling was also, I felt like a
Yes.
topic that was mentioned there at the last session, but I've also, it was also raising pulses of many people during the
Yeah.
conference, and there was
Yes.
very many a
Yeah.
heated discussion about what biased
Exactly.
signaling is, and it's actually quite funny at the journal because I handle a lot of these manuscripts, but then we have a lot of submissions, so there is also my other editors who handle GPCRs maybe less frequently. But sometimes also get assigned to these, and they often come to me and to ask about biased signaling, and I cannot really answer these questions in any easy way. So this is also something
I
that
think
still is.
allosteric modulators is also some a very
Oh
hot
yes,
topic
yeah.
on that end, so there's a lot of hotness to it right now.
Absolutely.
But I think it's a very interesting and very much evolving field. This we know a lot, but we don't know nearly enough to.
And this again coming back to ligands and small molecules, but now also peptides, antibodies,
Antibodies, yeah.
just because of the relative easiness with which GPCRs can be targeted, and also their involvement in so many pathological and physiological processes, they will be always of interest because we can actually, they are of interest for basic biology, basic science, but they are also interesting from the translational point of view, and they will always be.
Agreed, agreed, agreed. I think we need more tools here. We have a lot of tools that were developed to very quickly screen and look at multiple pathways and integrate this. And then you have computational biology that comes in. And then you have all of, machine learning AI that also comes into the equation to help speed things up. But still, there is a lot to learn. Especially about in my mind, the mind-blowing thing is, why would a GPCR signal below the plasma membrane, and what is the consequences on a physiological event or a pathophysiological event? And can we actually design a therapeutic modality to only target the GPCR signaling beyond the plasma membrane? To actually, there's lots of things to consider. It's a matter, I think, it's developing the right tools.
So
And
that's another thing. We do see a lot of manuscripts that are just method developments. And some of them are specifically for GPCRs, for different signaling. This year specifically, we've seen a few about dimerization, oligomerization, for example, and this still calls for new methods, better
Interesting.
methods. No, again, as like I said, I am skewed because I look at these biochemistry, biophysics manuscripts, so they will have a lot of methods development
Wow. Interesting. All right,
focus.
last couple of last
Sure.
questions. I know we talked a little bit about advice, but is there anything else you'd like to potentially share with people who want to build a career in editing or in publishing in general? I think based on the beginning of our conversation is, one, identify what you like and what you don't like, and if you like to read and write and write re write and mainly read broadly, that this might be a good career
Yes,
path.
a very good career path. Yes, it's one thing which I like to maybe spread is that the knowledge, that the awareness is that this is a job that still keeps you very close to science, very close to ongoing, to cutting edge science. It's your job as an editor, it's your job to know what is going on, to know about new developments as soon as they show up, or maybe even before that, and which is why we go to conferences and try to stay in touch with the field. So while you're not in the lab anymore, and you are not in academia, for those of you who wonder, maybe should I stay in academia? Is academia the place for me or not? Being an editor takes you away from being an editor for a journal that is published by a publisher and not a society, takes you away from academia, being a professional editor. But you still stay very, very close and very much in touch with that community. You work with the community, you work with researchers, with students, postdocs, with the PIs, very, very closely every day. So for someone who finds that maybe lab isn't their place, but they still like science and they still really do care about, well, just science, it's a very, very good choice. And I think this is something that maybe people are not aware of,
I
that you
don't
still get.
the satisfaction of
Yes, a lot. And but you don't feel, as an editor, you don't feel detached from science. We are really not these external entities that just tell you
Says yes or
yes or
no.
no. Yes, we do this eventually. We make some decisions, but
Yes.
these are very much based in science, and what we
Yeah.
really are after is interesting findings.
I love it.
Pushing science forward
Yeah.
in that way, in a way. I like sometimes to think that we are very much connectors between the scientists, between the authors and the referees.
Yeah.
And once we find a good connection, really magic happens in these papers, these manuscripts, but become so much better. That's very also very satisfying. So this is another thing, you know. Someone might think that if I don't do the science, if I am not physically doing it, or if I'm not involved as a PI, as someone who wrote the grant,
Yeah.
then how do I? Then I'm just reading about other people's work. But
Yeah.
actually, it is very satisfying when when I find a referee who is excited to read the manuscript, and when they suggest some experiments, or maybe have this different look at the
Yeah.
research, and the authors come back to me and say, "We didn't think about it, but it is such a great idea, and we th this is thank you for choosing that referee." This happens, and it
Yeah.
is extremely, extremely
Satisfying.
satisfying. I feel, I always feel very, very well when that happens, that I was able to find someone
Yeah.
who contributed to these authors' research by just giving them a different perspective.
I love it. All right, last question, and it might be an odd one. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give yourself? And how far back in time would you have to go? I know, and it's late. So if I let me start, let me while you think about it, if I could go back in time, I would tell myself to trust my instincts more. And I think I would go back about 10 years, what, right? Maybe 2 years before finishing my PhD.
I have something in mind, but again,
It's up to
I
you
just
if
I have to
it's up to you if you want to share.
I want to share because I think it might be important. I just don't want, I'm wondering how to formulate it so it doesn't sound
Look,
as if I'm unhappy with my own experience. But
it's
I
your
think my
story, it's your story, so.
So one thing which I now see very, very clear is how important the interactions between people are, and how important having a great mentor is. And I did have many, many very good mentors in science. You just cannot go through it without finding a mentor. But I realize now that you can have mini mentors, people who will mentor you in that area or in that area, and they are extremely valuable. And I think I did not fully appreciate that, in that I was sometimes I did appreciate the help which I got, but I was sometimes maybe too shy to reach out to someone who could be my mentor in that or that aspect, because I didn't want to be, I didn't want to take
Strip
their
them.
time
Yeah.
to just everyone is busy and everyone
Yeah.
has so much work, and who am I to ask for their help? But now I see how important it is in science, but in life in general, to
Yeah.
have these guides in your life, to have mentors. And I would be braver about asking people for help, for their input,
Yeah.
for their perspective. So I would encourage myself back then, but also everyone else, to be brave about
Yeah.
finding mentors and establishing good mentoring relations,
Yeah.
and being a good mentor, mentee, but also being a good mentor to anyone you can, and
I love it. I think that's very important. And a mentor can be somebody who has gone through the experience that you're going through, but that can be a peer as well, who's
Yeah.
going through the same experience as you are currently. And I think I want to say maybe as PhD scientists, we always, at least in my case, I always thought I had to do everything on my own. And I
Yeah.
don't ask for help. I have to do all the experiments for the paper. Otherwise, it's not my paper, which is not true.
Right. Yeah. Or like at least I have to contribute some like
Something
I don't
extra then, yeah. So that, no, absolutely. And I think, and I have to say that the GPCR field in general, most people are very kind. You reach out
Yeah.
to anybody, they will, if they don't have the time, they will tell you, "Oh, I don't have the time, but you should talk to that person." And I think, nobody should feel bad about asking for help in the field, but in general either. What's the worst thing that can happen if you ask for help from someone? They're going to say no, but at least you tried. And obviously, you're not going to reach out to one person, you're going to reach out to multiple, and eventually somebody's going to respond and say yes.
Yes, yeah. And then, those people who said no, they just usually simply don't have the time at the time, but they will already know you as a person who is invested,
Yes.
who is looking for
Yeah.
help, for
Yes.
people who can share their expertise with them. So you
Yeah.
are, even when you are turned down, you show yourself as someone who is serious about their project,
Exactly.
the
Exactly.
whatever you were working on and searching for guidance with. So,
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think even our conversation serves as a basis for mentorship, because your own experience is unique, but anyone who relates to you can use your experience as an inspiration, which I think is really cool.
I hope so. If
I'm
it's
sure
helpful to anyone.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. I think a lot of people in academia, including myself, when I was in academia, in my mind it was like you do a master's, a PhD, one, maybe two postdocs, and then you become a professor, and that's it. Nothing else. And if you fail at that, you are the biggest failure in the world. And it's not true. There's other things that you can do with your life,
True,
with your
true.
time, where you still contribute to science. You are a scientist, in your case, since age six, when you first looked into the microscope. You can contribute to the field, to any field, to the scientific cause in general, from different aspects. And I think it has a lot of value if you do something that you really enjoy, because and you're really good at, so that it doesn't feel like it's heavy lifting.
Absolutely.
But
Like
there's
I
no.
said at the beginning, your job gives back to you too.
Yes, it does. It does. Katarzyna, any last words before we wrap up?
I think it's great talking to you, and I am a talkative person, so.
Okay, so I think then we're gonna break now. I thank you again for joining me. It was really fun
Thank
talking
you.
to you.
Thank you.
All right, I'm gonna stop recording. We can let people wonder what we talk about afterwards. Can I ask you a favor? Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Many of you come back to watch our videos but aren't subscribed. Having more subscribers will help us get you more content. Thank you for joining us and listening to this Dr. GPCR podcast episode. We would like to thank our Dr. GPCR guest, our team members, Attila, Ines, Montserrat, Ivana, Andreina, and Balint. A huge thank you to our 2023 ecosystem partners, Domain Therapeutics, GPCR Therapeutics, Design Pharmaceuticals, Montana Molecular, and Orion Biotechnology. If you like our podcast, leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcast. You can also leave us a testimonial at drgpcr.com/testimonials and subscribe to our newsletter. Another way to support us is to share your favorite Dr. GPCR program with your network and colleagues. Email us with any questions or suggestions at hello@drgpcr.com. Until next time, stay safe.